welcome back to Shattering Myths. Before we go to the phones, and we have two callers here currently on hold, but I'll go to the phones in just a quick second. I was clarifying a mistake that I made in an earlier translation, where I was speaking of the 7 days that you shall eat bread without yeast, and yeast on indeed on the first day, and then I read you shall observe the Shabbat by removing yeast from your homes and households, and I told you that really isn't accurate. It's just 7 days you shall eat bread without yeast. Indeed, on the first day, you shall, Shabbat, you shall, in a verb form, rest and reflect, removing and refraining from using yeast. And this is from, which is men, your homes and households, Beyeth, which is the basis of Beyreth, which is the covenant. And so I was just curious, and I said, if God wanted to say just remove and wanted to use the verb remove and didn't want to associate this with his promise or something that he was doing, or on the concept of rest and reflecting, and refraining from and ceasing, what word, is there a more direct Hebrew word to convey that concept? And what I found is that there's 12. Now, Hebrew is a remarkable language. There's 12 Hebrew words for remove. The law is to remove, is to just leave a remnant, which wouldn't have been appropriate. Kor is to remove in the sense of departing and turning aside from something, removing yourself from something. Kabob is to turn away from something. Kub and Nakak are to backslide and being removed because you've slid backwards. Mush is to depart and to cease from something. It goes on and on. There are 12 words that God could have selected to communicate different aspects of the concept of removing, and yet he chose to verbalize the concept of the Shabbat. And by taking a noun and a title for the seventh day, which means the promise of seven, and to create a verbal form for it, he is communicating this whole notion that we rest and reflect, we remove and we refrain from yeast on this day. Extraordinarily insightful commentary. We have Anne calling in from Indiana regarding the observance of this day. Hello, Anne. How are you?
Hi, Yada. How are you?
Well, wonderful. I'm just got to on the air, got to demonstrate that I am a flawed and dented and dull implement, and that I am prone to mistake. And I love doing that. It's just one of the things that pleases me no end, because first, when you find that you've made a mistake, you grow from it, you learn. And that's a fun thing to do, and it's always nice to be able to correctly present oneself as imperfect. You know, that so many people that do radio shows or that write books like to present themselves as all-knowing. Well, I'm happy to tell you that is not the case with me. So I'm a happy guy. I just presented and corrected a mistake. So I understand that you think you made a mistake as well and are concerned about it. You're not celebrating your mistake like I am.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm a little tongue-tied right now.
Okay. My producer, Scott, said that you were concerned that you're not observing the festival feast of unleavened bread correctly because you ate some cheese and you did not know that cheese had yeast in it.
That's
Is that correct?
Correct?
Okay. You know, I almost made the same mistake last night. I was having a glass of wine with my matzah last night while I was preparing dinner for my wife and I. And I said, I always enjoy cheese with wine and with the matzah. It looked like that would be a good thing. And just something said, I just don't think so. That's not on the menu for tonight. Let's just have the wine with the unleavened bread, and I didn't. Now, in your case, you did. What is the? Let me ask you this question, Anne. What is the purpose of matzah?
Removing sin and corruption from our lives.
That is absolutely correct. So if you goofed by, and I almost goofed last night, by, and I just goofed this morning, by not perfectly doing what God is suggesting that we ought to do on this day. Does he have a remedy for that?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? I do have a remedy.
Okay. I say, if you did something last night that was imperfect, so that you are an imperfect human being, does God have a solution for that to make you perfect?
Yes.
And is it not matzah?
Yes.
So you were celebrating matzah, so you answered the invitation, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
All right. So the fact that you didn't do it perfectly, isn't the whole purpose of matzah to resolve imperfections in imperfect people so as to make them appear perfect?
Yes, but I sure was not making that connection.
Yeah, well, that is the whole connection. There really isn't anything more to it than that. It isn't about you doing something perfectly. It's about you and me being imperfect and being perfected on this day by God, by his work. All we're doing is celebrating the work that he has done.
Okay, so therefore, before I came on air with you, I was trying to hear what you were saying. So we are to remove the yeast from our homes?
We are, from our homes and from our households. We are to, but it says here the actual term is a verb form of Shabbat. And so what does a verbal form of Shabbat? Shabbat is a special day that relative to this, to unyeasted bread. So we know that by using a verbal form of Shabbat that it's a special day. A day set apart from all others. You did that. You made it a special day. You set it apart from ordinary days. That it is a time to rest and reflect. Rest on because we're not saving ourselves. God is saving us, so we rest and we reflect. It's a day set apart to God and not for our ordinary work. You did that. And so he's telling us right here that it isn't just the simple act of removing. If he wanted to use remove, there were 12 verbs he could have chosen that were more effective at just the concept of removing. It is to cease those things associated with yeast, to rest and reflect, and refraining from the use of yeast in our homes on this day. Now, in terms of the removal of yeast, that's another question, and it gets back into this concept of, is the understanding of what God is communicating, this resting and reflecting on what God is communicating here, the intent, or is the intent to control our actions? If the intent is to control our actions, then the best choice would be, boy, if something's got yeast in it, get rid of it. If the intent is for us to understand, which God communicated by using BN, he was when he said that the beginning of this process, which is for your understanding, if the purpose is for understanding, if it is for the reflecting aspect of the Shabbat, then the removal of yeast is something that we can learn from. It isn't something to do, but something to understand. So those are the two ends of that spectrum. Now, I've told everyone that I am at the far right end of that spectrum. I view almost everything in the Torah as instructions, as insights, as teachings, and as guidance that we can learn from. Now, others are on it's a rule, it's a mandate, it's something we ought to do end of the spectrum, and therefore they try to do everything that God says. Now, it isn't possible to do everything that is associated with God's instructions, and there's lots of aspects of it that we just ought not do. You know, for example, taking a four-footed cute little lammy into our homes and having it get to know the family for 4 days and then slaughtering it with our hand on its head, before we personally prepare it for the Passover meal. I understand the symbolism of that. I understand why God had them do that. I ain't doing it.
Yeah.
In all, So I didn't take the my lamb chops and because by the time that I bought the lamb chops, the blood was already out of the lamb chops. We're not supposed to consume blood anyway. But I didn't go to the store and say, you know, I'd like a little lamb's blood so I can smear it on my doorway. I understand the symbolism of that, but I don't look at the Torah as a set of laws to be obeyed. I look at the Torah as God's teaching and his guidance to be learned, to be understood, to be acted upon. And I act upon it by embracing what God is offering. I'm not, you know, Yahweh in diminished corporeal form became the Passover lamb.
Yes.
Yahweh, and as his soul, fulfilled matzah on our behalf. I'm not going to become the Passover lamb. I'm not going to go into Sheol on my behalf or your behalf. I'm going to understand that he did that, celebrate it, capitalize on it, make a joyous event out of it. And I think when we get so wrapped up in the what should I do, we cease to celebrate. And you know, it was interesting in that last presentation that God just gave us. He used the term celebrate four times. Are you celebrating something when you're fixated on, oh my God, did I do that correctly?
No, and this helped me so much. You have no idea. I'm overjoyed because I really thought that I cut myself out of this family until next year.
Yeah. Yeah, and I can hear both the sadness and the relief in your voice, and God's not an ogre, you know. He's just not mean spirited. That's just not his style. He is your dad. Now imagine your dad, and I don't know if you had if you won the dad lottery or were like me and got a dad that was abusive. So if you didn't, if you got a dad like mine, then imagine a perfect dad. Can you imagine a loving dad coming to you and saying, you know, I gave you some instructions. Yeah, you attended. Your mind was right. Your attitude was great. You did everything right, but you screwed up on this one little detail. So you're banished from my household. Get out of here. And not any chance in a bazillion that he would say that. And our Heavenly Father is a great deal more loving than any earthly father. You're in fine shape, Anne. Hello, and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. I am glad that Anne's call was in juxtaposition to my own mistake, because it helps to reinforce the benefit of matzah. You know, matzah isn't about us doing anything perfectly. It is about us responding to Yah's invitation to be perfect and to make us perfect. So if there's any day to goof, not in terms of rejecting or ignoring Yah's invitation to celebrate matzah and Pesach and Bukkotim with him, but in the sense of if you got a day that you want to goof, then this is the day to resolve goofs. And that's why I wanted to point out that the verbal form of Shabbat was used in this context to present the idea of ceasing from the ordinary use of yeast in our homes at this time. Hello, Larry. I can hear that you're with us. How are you today?
I'm doing fine, Yada. How are you?
I'm celebrating.
I'm in the middle of my party here. It's just okay. A party. I'm not working today.
Okay. And I'm not positive that as I look at the terminology that God used, it while not working to celebrate a feast with him, sounds like a marvelous use of the day. I'm not sure that the instructions of it require that of us. You can always err on the side.
I'm just doing it.
you look at a marvelous example, and this is going to come in very handy for those who don't benefit from the covenant in the short term and who choose to turn to Yah during the tribulation. look at Hezekiah's Israel. Almost every town in the northern kingdom had been sacked, and the inhabitants had been hauled away to Assyria, to Babylon. They were being tortured and enslaved there. And there set Jerusalem high on the hill as the next target. And they had been abandoned by all of their earthly allies. And there was 185,000 Assyrian warriors bearing down on the place, and there was no way whatsoever that the Israelites could defend themselves. And so rather than fight the Assyrians, Hezekiah read the Torah, said, you know, we ought to be celebrating Passover, unleavened bread, and first fruits. Why don't we do that? And as you know, he was 2 weeks late, asked God for an extension of time. God said, that's fine. Got no problem with that, which tells you that the timing isn't the most important issue. And they celebrated it for rather than 1 week, for 2 weeks, because they were having such a good time. And so they were not about the ordinary business of defending themselves against these 185,000 warriors. They were instead celebrating matzah. So this is one of those days where, Larry, you know, if you choose to take the day off and celebrate with Yahweh, I think that's a grand idea. But I don't think his instructions specifically said that.
I don't either, but I'm enjoying it, and that's what I'm doing. That was my plan, and I'm sticking to it.
That's good.
I can use the break, too. So, yeah, I happen to agree with you wholeheartedly. He is about us understanding. He left letters behind, words behind for us to read to understand so we could understand his nature. It's one of the reasons that, you know, when you look at Hosea and he says, you know, you're going to greet me as an individual and I'm going to take the Lord's out of your mouth. It isn't just the word Lord that's bothering him, although that's
right.
Bad. It's the way it changes his nature. I want to be greeted as an individual. It's just like all fear of me is man-made and learned by rote.
Yeah, let me ask you a question, Larry. Are you living in Egypt?
No.
But are you living in a world that is oppressed and corrupted by religion and politics?
Yes, I am.
So
and getting more so every day, as much.
So the offer of Pesach and matzah, which is to provide a doorway away from these things and a means to cleanse these things from you, even though you don't live in Egypt, is probably still a beneficial thing for Larry.
Very beneficial thing for me. You bet it is.
So what you have to do, though, you have to look at the example that God has presented, and you've got to think about it and say, how do I apply what he has offered to my life? How do I benefit from this very thing? And so you've got to use your noodle on top of the neck there to figure it out, right? You got to think about it.
Yeah.
And thinking about it's not such a bad thing. That's what you took today off to not just only think about it, but to celebrate all of the thoughts and all of the benefits.
Completely celebrated. I do.
When we return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break, we're going to consider why Yahweh chose the fungus of yeast to be the metaphor for sin. To Shattering Myths, I'm your host and tour guide, Yada. We're going to consider why Yahweh may have chosen the metaphor of yeast in conjunction with the bread as a symbol of how sin infects us. Yeast is typically a unicellular organism. It is a microorganism which is classified as a fungus. As such, to live, it feeds off organic substrates, most commonly dead matter. And its primary purpose in nature is in the process of decomposition of that which was once alive. So we're getting a pretty clear picture already. In this way, it represents what happens to the souls of those who die estranged from God. They disintegrate, and they are destroyed as their bodies decompose and their souls dissipate into nothingness. Further, as a fungus, yeast thrives in darkness. This is consistent with the plethora of corrupt religious schemes which are corrosive to our souls, especially the impetus for them, which is Babylon. It is also interesting that yeast produces carbon dioxide when oxygen, which is necessary for the breath of life, which is equated to our soul, our consciousness, when oxygen is depleted, carbon dioxide is a byproduct of yeast in the fermentation process. Oxygen is necessary for life. Carbon dioxide kills us. In human hands, yeast is most commonly used in the presence of oxygen to aerate bread, making it rise, and to carbonate beer through the production of carbon dioxide. The leavening process in dough causes a foaming action which permeates and softens the entire loaf. This is done through fermentation, biologically changing the chemistry of the dough as the yeast first reproduces through the consumption of carbohydrates in the flour and then reacts with water, heat, and acidity to produce either carbon dioxide or ethanol gas. In the absence of oxygen, yeast turns the sugars and carbohydrates in beer and wine into alcohol, actually ethanol, C2H5OH, through the fermentation process. The first lesson is that it doesn't take much yeast, read Sin, to permeate the entire loaf of bread, read Our Mortal Nature. The second is that the byproduct of yeast in beer and wine, alcohol, isn't the most desirable spirit with whom to associate. And the third is that the byproduct of yeast is carbon dioxide, which is lethal. Species of yeast are known as opportunistic pathogens, and they can create infections in humans. There are a number of killer yeasts which secrete toxic proteins which are lethal to receptive cells. There is a yeast pathogen which kills at least 10% of AIDS patients. Yeast of the Candida genus cause irritating oral and vaginal infections. In many foods, and mostly with regards to cheeses and meats, the presence of yeast leads to spoilage. They become rotten, unedible. As these things relate to sin, the consequence is not only death, but more importantly, sin spoils our relationship with our Heavenly Father. Adding insult to injury, yeast was first used in Egypt, the very place from which Yahweh rescued his people. There, yeast exists as a natural contaminant in flour. It was used to brew beer, the most prevalent beverage among Egyptians at that time. As a fact, beer was the money of the day. Laborers were paid in beer. Making sure that he had made his point, the same three letters which comprise yeast, which is sa'or, vocalized sa'ar, meaning to exalt oneself, rising up in power, authority, and majesty, to convert and to crush, and as a result, to be left behind. Pharaoh had exalted himself by claiming to be the son of the sun. He lived majestically in religious and political splendor. He not only coveted the free labor his Israelite slaves were providing, crushing them became his way of rebelling against God. And as a result, he, his people, and their religion were left behind as Yahweh led his people to the promised land, leaving Egypt in ruins. Now, speaking of the corrupted nature of this fungus of yeast, God would go on to say, indeed, any and every soul who consumes yeasted food shall be cut off and separated from Yisrael from the first day until the seventh day. So, God is saying that he does not want us to consume yeast. Now, the instruction is clear. Don't consume yeast during this particular time. And he has now said, however, that the yeast that he does not want us to consume is chamesh. The chamesh is not beer with that has been made with yeast. Chemesh is not wine that has been fermented with yeast. Chemesh is not cheese, which has yeast in it. It does not speak of cakes, which have risen with leavening agents, like baking soda. Chemesh is a very specific kind of yeasted food. Chemesh is bread, which includes yeast and has become soured. So indeed, every soul who consumes chemesh, bread which includes yeast and has been soured, shall be cut off and separated from Yisrael from the first day until the seventh day. Yisrael is a compound of three Hebrew words, Yish, Shera, El, which means individuals who strive, struggle, persist, endure, and persevere at, with and empowered by God. You don't want to be separated from Yisrael. Now, is it possible that because of mistakes? For example, I am positive that in my youth that I ate bread with yeast on this day because I was a Christian and had no concept of what this day represents. Now, the fact now that I understand it, capitalize upon it, accept it, embrace it, act upon it, that certainly means that my prior separation from being an individual who engages and endures with Yahweh has been resolved by this day, by the benefit of this day. And we must look at this day as the day to resolve our sin. And we celebrate that resolution by not eating bread, which includes yeast. Now, I want to remind our listeners that we ought not get ourselves into the same problem that Chawa, Adam's wife, and the mother of his children, his companion in the Garden of Eden, of great joy. She, when God said, I don't want you to eat. You can eat anything you want, just please don't eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Because at that point, you're going to have to deal with the concept of choice. You know, it's there so that I've created this perfect environment, but there you're going to learn that there's a dark side of the universe, an adversarial position that is opposed to me. And at this point, all you know is that I love you and that we have a wonderful relationship. Eat from that tree, then you're going to die. You'll become mortal. And you'll have to make this choice that we're being asked to make now. And what Eve said when she was confronted by Satan is she said, she expanded on God's instruction and she said, you said you didn't eat it, you shouldn't even touch it. And when we go and we say, boy, you know, indeed, any soul who consumes yeasted cheese, yeasted beer, yeasted wine, because we want to add to God's instructions, we get ourselves in trouble. Chawa got in trouble. Didn't lead to a good place for her, did it? And so did Yahweh come down and say, hey, you know, because you touched the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, here's the consequence? No. So is there a consequence? Here, according to what he said, let's just take his words. Is there a consequence to eating cheese with yeast?
No.
No. Is there a consequence of drinking wine that's been made with yeast?
No.
Consequence of drinking beer that's been made with yeast? No. Even if you were to have a Hefeweizen, which is beer made with wheat instead of barley, that is typically unfiltered, and therefore some of the residue of the yeast would be in it. Is there any bread in your beer?
Baked
bread? Nope. Nope. So the instruction is bread, which includes yeast. Now, if you were to have a cake and it was made with baking soda, would that be part of this? Is baking soda yeast?
it's a yeasting agent. I don't know that it's yeast,
though. No, it's not yeast. It is an agent. It's a leavening agent, but it isn't yeast. Now, I'm not trying to suggest that you should cut every corner that there is to cut, but the instruction is really clear, and I think we always err when we go beyond God's instructions. His instructions is pertinent to chamash. Chamash is bread, which includes yeast and has become soured. That's the only thing that he's mentioning here. Matzah is also bread without yeast. Now, why bread and not other things, and why yeast, not other things? Now, we certainly covered yeast. I mean, it's kind of hard to miss the reason that God chose yeast as the representation of a religious and political sin. I mean, that's a fungus that has lots of deadly, dark, demented, corrupting associations. But bread, we didn't cover that. Why bread? Why yeast in association with bread? What is bread comprised of?
The bread of life, for one thing.
Yes, but what is bread comprised of? Grain, right?
Yeah.
Right? And,
yes.
And what is purified grain the symbol of throughout the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms?
Well, yeah, same. It's that purified grain. Those are the souls that are
saved.
Family, sure.
Yeah, it's the souls that are saved, family. And so don't corrupt the souls of the family. Hello, welcome back to Shattering Myths. Let's return to this last statement that we read in Yahweh's voice. He said, indeed, any soul who consumes bread with yeast that has become soured will be cut off and separated from Yisrael from the first until the seventh day. When God was leading his children out of the crucible of Egypt, my guess is that he had a zero-tolerance policy for those that would ignore his instructions and say, you know, I don't give a hoot. I want to eat some good old bread today. Probably had kicked them out immediately from the community that he was taking into the Promised Land. I can tell you, though, that you can eat bread with yeast on this day and still be part of God's family. I did while I was a Christian. I don't now, but the whole purpose of this day is to resolve my sins of the past. You look at Hezekiah's Yisrael. Because they needed a two-week extension to celebrate unleavened bread, on unleavened bread, it is highly likely that most of the people in the community ate bread with yeast. They would have had no concept as to why they should not be doing so. And yet when they observed and responded to and celebrated this day with Yahweh 2 weeks later, Yahweh saved them. It is also insightful that God didn't say that every individual, he did not use ish, which is the Hebrew word for individual. He didn't say every man, which would be the Hebrew word Adam, for example. He said any soul, nefesh. He wants to associate saved souls, which are synonymous with the purified grain that comprises bread, that it's those souls that are either cut into the covenant or cut off from the covenant. It's souls here, not individuals, not flesh and bone. Also, since we have made the point about Hamas, the verb here is karat. Karat is the verb that is used every time that Yah says that he established his covenant, he cut his covenant. It's like cutting a deal in business. You either cut into the deal or cut out of the deal. This is saying that if you don't observe this day and you deliberately consume chamash, bread, which includes yeast, you're going to be cut off from the deal that is the covenant, from the relationship that is the covenant. And here it says specifically from Yisrael, which is individuals who engage and endure with God. And it does say from the first day until the seventh day. That is the time we're supposed to refrain from eating that bread. And there could be the inference that we're only cut off from Israel for that period of time. Now, I wouldn't bet my soul on it, but that is the way that it reads. So Yahweh provided a plan, a path, a procedure, a seven-step way home. Follow it as he laid it out, as he fulfilled it, and you will live. Ignore it, change it, reject it, and you will die. Your soul will be destroyed. Such is the consequence of man's oppressive schemes, and mostly religious schemes. For those who may protest, just saying that, you know, the penalty is simply expulsion from a country from which they have no affinity, I say there's a reason that Yahweh coins names which convey meaning. Israel represents every individual who engages and endures with God. Therefore, to be separated from Israel is to be severed from the source of life, from our Heavenly Father's family. The covenant was cut with Israel. Yaakov became Israel. Moreover, God will go on to add forgiveness for those from different races and places, communities and cultures to the list of those who will be excluded, foreigners, from those who will be excluded from the source of life if they ignore his invitation to matzah. So since he will add foreigners to the list of those who are excluded from life, this is for all of us. Now, this was not the first time, nor will it be the last time, that God has been or will be so direct, so blunt regarding a departure from a very specific path that he has described in the Torah. His first such proclamation occurred during the discussion of Pesach, he said, and this is in Bamidbar in the wilderness, 9:13. The individual who himself is clean, morally pure, but does not exist on the way, when he abandons and fails to act upon Pesach, that soul will be cut off and separated from her and from her family. And that is because Yahweh's offering to approach was not present to bring him near at the appointed time. That individual will bear their guilt.